Extra Life was born, it just occurred to me that gamers should be able to do the things they love to help sick and injured kids as well. And so the funds that Extra Lifers raise can go to a variety of purposes in the local area at the local hospital.
So maybe your extra $20 or your extra $50 goes to curing 87% of children with leukemia.
62 kids like me enter a children's hospital every minute.
And I was one of those kids. You could save their life too.
Play games, heal kids.
Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers. Lose the wizard hat. And ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome once again to another edition of Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today. With free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of Sega, Nintendo, RoboCop, Dragon Ball, or something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. Also brought to you by Gamefly, your destination for new and used video games, now with new membership options for everyone, including elite plans so you always get the newest game and a budget plan to help you save some scratch. Plus, their store now carries Lego products. Woo-hoo. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want without worrying about late fees. And when you're done, just send it back with the postage paid envelope for a new one, or pay a lot less than in-store prices and keep it forever. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Don't forget, Extra Life is coming soon. Yes, it should have been this weekend, but it's not. Life doth occurreth. But we will be live broadcasting starting at 10 Eastern, 9 Central on Friday, November 5th in 2021. We'll have video games. There'll be Geek Cave Live. There probably will even be some tabletop RPG for all you D&D fans out there.
Yes.
COVID depending, we're going to be together to offer you the best experience we can muster. And of course, everything that we're doing, your support and all, is for the Children's Miracle Network hospitals. They get the whole enchilada of any donations and support you throw our way. The Geek Cave Podcast is not receiving penny one for your donations. The whole thing gets to go to the program. And to just entice a little further, because sometimes you think, you know, I'm doing this because I'm a good person, I have the goodness of my heart, but it's nice to get a little bit of moral dessert occasionally.
Yeah.
And so we've got some fantastic prizes, including t-shirts, Geek Cave podcast swag, gift cards, movies, video games, a Genki Shadowcast game capture card, and of course our grand prize, an Xbox Series S.
With custom Geek Cave themed controller.
Nice. Woo-hoo. A donation of $40 or more gets you a custom sketch by our very own Justin White, and a donation of $1,000 or more gets you the chance to pick the game we'll be playing, providing we can get it.
Yeah, if we can find it.
If we can find it, we'll play it.
I will find you, and I will play you.
All right. So, I have been just absolutely swamped with work, Justin. I have been unable to attend to any of my social obligations. Tell me that I may live vicariously through you.
Oh, absolutely.
Hit it! Pilot Party! Pilot Party!
Pilot Party!
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. Why only the first episode? Because after the first episode, the neighbors come home and they kick me out of their house.
All right.
Okay, boys, I have a question.
Hmm.
Is it wrong to try and pick up girls in a dungeon?
How much peril are they in?
I don't know, but that's the name of the TV series.
I figured that's where we were going.
This is an anime series.
Founded
founded on Netflix.
The sarcasm is strong with this one, he says, nodding his head toward Darren.
Gods who created the universe descended from the heavens to live among humans on the condition that they swore never again to use their powers. The gods' only remaining power is the blessing, which they grant to humans to level up their powers, similar to how characters level up in video games in D&D. These humans are known as Familia and become the gods' family. Cut to a young man about to have his butt handed to him by a Minotaur. Bell, the kid in question, the only member of the goddess Hestia's Familia, is outmatched and has hit a dead end. He is literally about to meet the horns. He is saved by A.S. Wallenstein, a high-level adventurer and a member of the Familia of the goddess Loki. He falls in love with her, because of course he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that tracks.
Bell then runs through the streets covered in the Minotaur's blood, making the townsfolk scream and lose their lunch.
All right.
He goes to see a friend slash teacher to ask him about Asa. You know, her likes, her favorite colors. Does she have a, air quote, partner?
Named Misa.
He returns home and is greeted by Hestia. Not only is he the only member of her Familia, but oh my god, they were roommates. She loves Belle and becomes jealous when she hears about Asa, or Aeas, sorry. Belle, for his part, seems oblivious to her feelings and subtle, yet not so subtle, advances. That evening, she levels him up and realizes he has gained the magical skill Relias Phase, which will raise his level rapidly based on the strength of his feelings as he fights, but decides to keep the secret from him because it makes him very valuable to other gods who may try to acquire him. The next day, after more adventuring, Bell's stats raise dramatically. He plans on talking to Aeas, but overhears her Familia talking about how he embarrassed himself fighting the Minotaur, and how somebody that lowly shouldn't even be worthy to lick her boots. Realizing how pathetic he must seem compared to Aeas, he runs off and absentmindedly enters the dungeon. To let off some steam, he slays a crap ton of monsters. Just goes nuts.
I've been there. Yeah.
As the sun rises, Hestia is outside of the house waiting because he never came home that night. And we see him approaching the house. He's beaten, he's bloodied, but he's victorious and inspired nonetheless. That's where the first episode ends. This is a silly, very silly anime. It made me laugh out loud several times just because of the absurdity of everything. And I really like the idea that you can level up.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, there's a whole scene where Hestia is leaning over Bell, and he's got this sigil on his back, and runes pop up, and they're scrolling up and down like like numbers on a chart and whatever, and he's increasing in stats. It's a really cool idea. It's a really fun show. And I suggest you give it a try.
Nice.
As for my predictions, this continues on. He continues to level up. He finally gets the courage to ask Aeas out. She agrees. They tentatively go on a couple of dates, dungeon crawling, as you do. Ultimately, they find out that they're not really compatible as boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, but they are really good friends. And really, it was the journey along the way that made everything worthwhile. Cut. We pan out to real-life people sitting around a tabletop, rolling dice, and this was all just an RPG storyline.
I love it.
And the DM is finally happy that these people showed up to a game, and they could finally play some gosh-dang D&D for once. Because, Keith, I'm telling you, if you cancel one more time on this session, you're out. We don't need 36 paladins. We can do with 35. You are superfluous, my friend. Also, you were in charge of the Cheetos. Where are they?
That is suspiciously specific.
That's very specific.
Keith.
Man, yeah. Keith.
So anyway, well, that's my show.
Well, thank you, Justin.
That was good.
Mm-hmm. So, as we all know, there are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them are given new life, and some lie abandoned in the salt mines of forgotten entertainments. So this segment of the show will ask you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks you, should we review it? It was good then. The original's just as good now. Should we reboot it? The idea is sound, but we can modernize it and recapture some magic. We can revive it. What are these characters doing after a couple decades of growth and development? Or should we refuse it? Chad, please don't be the Baby Geniuses 2 of the cave. Harken back.
Wow.
Harken back to the days and nights of the mid-90s when we are in junior high. So few responsibilities, though we will complain about all of this work that is somehow required of us stupid children. Finally, the night rolls around, and it's time for some prime time television. So we turn on one of the three channels we have at our disposal, and there is a cartoon caricature with dark glasses and a yellow tie singing Moon Over Parma. What is this? This is the Drew Carey Show. The Drew Carey Show followed Carey as a fictionalized version of himself working in an office, hanging out with his friends, going through the day-to-day pieces of life. Star Drew Carey, of course, and it also starred Ryan Stiles as Lewis, his unambitious friend, Dietrich Bader as Oswald, the more dim-witted friend, and Christina Miller as Kate, an on-again, off-again girlfriend for a great number of the seasons. I'd also be remiss if I didn't mention Kathy Kinney as Mimi, Drew's office nemesis, and Craig Ferguson as Drew's boss, Mr. Wick, through most of the series.
God, I loved him.
Besides working in the department store of Winifred Louder, Drew and his friends also brew a caffeinated beer in their garage called Buzz Beer. And the show had a number of relationship entanglements, and what I think was a novel idea for the show at the time, every once and again they would run a stunt, they would host something called What's Wrong With This Episode?, where the show would have continuity errors built into it and an invitation to the audience to find them in order to win prizes. They did some live episodes wherein most of the scenes were improvised and would feature comics from Carey's other show, Whose Line Is It Anyway? It ran for 9 seasons, from 95 to 2009. And the characters of Drew and Mimi did come back, but not for full, like, reboots or revivals or anything. Drew came back during the finale sketch of Craig Ferguson's Late Late Show, where it is discovered that the entire thing was a dream and Craig Ferguson wakes up as Mr. Wick married to Drew Carey,
which I believe was a plot point in one of the episodes in one of the shows.
Oh yes, my gosh, that's great.
Season 7 or 8. And Mimi showed up, Kathy Kinney showed up as Mimi on The Price is Right as it for an April Fool's episode where she was the new executive producer who was there to axe Drew Carey should he make any mistakes.
Oh, my God.
And so looking at the Drew Carey Show, 9 seasons of light entertainment, should we review, reboot, revive, or refuse?
Review. It's just as good now as it was then. I did. If I had one thing to change, it would have been the Moon Over Parma intro was fine, but I loved it when they moved to Cleveland Rocks being the intro. But it's such a watchable show, and I thoroughly enjoyed it during its initial run. And I'm afraid that if we reboot it or revive it, they gonna mess it up somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And this is such a treasured sitcom, for me anyway, that I don't want them breaking what isn't broken.
Mm-hmm.
So just watch it whenever you can. It still holds up today, I would say.
Yeah. A reboot is right out because you can't do it with new people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, you can't. a refuse is right out because Darren, as Darren said, it's a great show. I loved it.
Yeah, don't be Millie and or Vanilli. Don't refuse it.
Yeah. I would like to see a limited revival, if anything.
Okay.
Not another continuation of the series like they did with Roseanne / the Connors, you know, where it's just, but a small, you know, 2-3 episode mini arc just to kind of maybe see what's going on now, if anything, but absolutely rewatch.
Yeah,
rewatch for sure.
I agree certainly with the reboot doesn't work here.
No.
Partially because it's the Drew Carey show. I mean, you can't have somebody else being Drew Carey. But also the fictionalized version of the Everyman is what most sitcoms seem to be now.
Fair, yeah.
So what made this stand out was Drew Carey as the character. But I'm not even sure if I'm on the revive group at this point. It ended weird.
You
know, the last couple of seasons ended weird. They toyed with camera stuff. They went from a multi-camera to a single camera setup.
Yeah.
And so it started getting, it had a higher budget, you know, for it. And that was nice. But it also started getting that soap opera vibe. And
yeah.
So some of the humor really kind of fell apart at
right.
that point. So
and
I'm
unfortunately,
on the,
that's how a lot of shows end up. The longer it goes, the funkier it gets towards the final season.
As with most things, have a great 7 seasons and then just assume that it doesn't go on.
Yeah.
And so I'm on the review side of this as well because, you know, I watched some episodes and clips. There's going to be a few political things and a few subjects that are very clearly of the mid-90s.
Right.
When we were still trying to gauge that. Is this appropriately funny or not? And some of it falls in the not now.
Yes.
Watch it with an understanding that we've grown.
Yeah. Well, and that's how I feel about any kind of piece of media is when you watch something, go in with the mindset of, when did this come out?
Mm-hmm.
And am I holding unrealistic expectations of something that came out decades ago?
Well, and to be able to hold it and say, I don't like this. This is why.
Right.
And move on from it.
You
don't punish a show that's 25 years old.
Yeah, I don't expect something that came out in 1940, for example, to have the same morals,
heavens.
You know, so on and so forth.
So, cool beans.
One of my favorite scenes from that entire show is Drew, Oswald, and Lewis are trying to put a band together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they need a guitar player. And so they're auditioning, and you just have this slew of famous guitar players, Slash from Guns N' Roses. I think Roy Clark may have been one of them. Blues guitarist Johnny Lang, just going through and through and through. And they always have these, no, he's too good. No, he's, you know, we're not paying you to play guitar. Get back to Rick and the Leaves. And then Joe Walsh shows up, and they're like, okay, he's good. But he's a little sloppy. That kind of, he's not going to make us look, you know, bad. Yeah. Hey, you're hired. And Joe looks around, is like, cool. What am I here for? And then just goes back to playing.
What am I here for?
You passed the audition. What audition?
Nice. I think my favorite, the joke that I remember the most was, I don't even remember why. I just know that Drew was terrified of driving because of something that had happened. And so he manages to, like, drive, like, do the carpool thing and get everyone back to his house. And he just kind of sits there and can't get out of the car. And so everyone eventually just gets out of the car. And the camera stays on Drew as it falls to night. And the car finally dies because it ran out of gas. And he's still death grip on the steering wheel.
Oh, there was another one where a company was trying to buy the neighborhood that Drew lived in, and Drew refused to sell his house. And so in order to intimidate him to sell, because they bought up all the land around it, they blasted floodlights into his house 24/7 and blared Van Halen's Panama. So for the entirety of Panama, you have this montage of them going through life in the house wearing sunglasses, trying to do normal things with this obnoxiously loud music and bright lights everywhere.
That's awesome.
The stunt that I remember was the first season. So the first season is the one I remember the most because we watched it. It was on at a prime time that I was awake and we were watching. Was you never saw his boss in that first season.
Yeah.
And then the last episode, he comes out and it's like Kevin Pollak. Yeah. Like, what are you doing? Like that stunt cameo is like, were you the voice the whole time? I actually don't know.
Yeah.
But what are you doing here?
I really did like it. That the boss character got better when it turned to Mr. Wick and Craig Ferguson. That is where I was introduced to Craig Ferguson. That is where I fell in love with him as a comedian. I'm like, yeah, we're good.
Same.
Awesome. I love it. All right. So I need to talk to my spouse more about recommending these shows because she's the one who said, hey, have you thought about this one? No, not in like 20 years. All right. So moving on to the movie trailer roundup. This is where, again, I just watch a whole bunch of movie trailers and give you some thoughts. Nightmare Alley. This is the most Willem Dafoe-y sounding voiceover that Willem Dafoe has ever Dafoe'd. American Underdog. Shazam's trying to play football. It looks like one of those inspirational type movies that we'll show in church. Hi, Kurt Warner. You'd be welcome on our show, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have so many things for him to sign.
Halloween Kills. I've kind of hit my limit on these movies. God of War 2. There's no Kratos. I cry foul.
I legit thought this was the Dynasty Warriors movie.
Yeah. Last Night in Soho, this trailer is trippy as an acid trip. I assume. I don't drop acid. Ida Red. Heist, crime, action, mystery. This one appeals to me a great deal, and I have no idea what's going on. West Side Story. Hey, Spielberg, please don't suck.
Please don't suck. Please don't suck. Please don't suck. God, I love the West Side Story. Don't suck.
Macbeth. The Scottish play looks very gray. Mm.
Does it look Scottish?
Yeah. Spencer, this is a deeply uncomfortable movie trailer. It makes me want to not watch this movie.
Yeah.
Ding. Needle in a Time Stack, a time-traveling love story with a hint of tension.
Ooh.
The Electrical Life of Lewis Wayne. Hey, Benedict Cumberscratch paints cats in a movie. What the Dickensian film is this?
Okay.
Dear Evan Hansen, hey, would you like to see an example of how a great stage play can be a terrible movie? Casting, folks. Casting. What works on Broadway doesn't work in a movie. It just does. They're different mediums. The 30-year-old who looks like a 30-year-old cannot play the 16-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah, this is true. I watched all these trailers with Chad yesterday, and the first time we see Evan Hansen, I'm like, how are you doing, fellow children?
I mean, the dude is three bad nights sleep away from looking like Steve Buscemi.
The dude looks like he has a 16-year-old in high school.
Oh, yeah.
Hasn't slept since high school.
Now, this all being said, the music to Dear Evan Hansen is great.
Oh, his voice is fantastic.
His voice is great. I believe this is the guy who played this role on Broadway, which then, is probably why they got him.
That makes sense, yeah.
And if you set the camera so that it was 90 feet away from him all the time, it'd been fine.
You know, going back to Needle in a Time Stack, the lead actor is the one who played Aaron Burr in Hamilton. And so now all I can think of is that Aaron Burr found time travel, and that's how he avoided, you know, ultimately his death in disrepute. He just ended up going into the future, and now he's got to go back.
You know what? I'm okay with this.
I'm going with it.
That works, I suppose. Yeah.
So we got a few reviews. Do you guys have any reviews?
I got a couple.
All right. Let's hear them.
Still watching What If on Disney Plus.
What If what?
What If blank. Yeah. Such as What If Zombies? What If Star-Lord was actually T'Challa? What If In one, what if Killmonger was the one who saved Tony Stark instead of Jensen?
Mm-hmm.
That one doesn't make a whole lot of sense because what the hell is Killmonger even doing there? And there are points throughout the episode where it's very clear to anybody with a pulse and three brain cells to rub together that Killmonger is a bad guy, but for some reason, nobody can figure it out. The follow-up was, what if Thor landed in Vegas instead of being found by Jane Foster? He's found on the Vegas Strip. And what we get is probably the best party movie I've ever seen in 15 minutes. Thor and the Warriors 3 and Lady Sif and Loki, who, by the way, in this version, Loki had never been raised by Odin. Odin returned Loki to his people, which is what Odin should have done in the first goddamn place. Odin and Thor are like super tight bros. Also, Loki and Thor. Loki is also a frost giant in every sense of the word. They have a party so epic that S.H.I.E.L.D. needs to call in Captain Marvel because they're going to break the planet if somebody doesn't stop the party. This is the best episode of What If.
Wow.
You need to watch this one and the Captain Carter one. And really, those two are the only ones that I think are like unmissable.
I did enjoy the Black Panther Star-Lord one.
Yeah, that one was fun too.
If only for that one, because Chadwick Boseman actually got to record those lines before he passed away. So it is, it's a nice send-off for...
It's his last role.
Yeah.
I think they're building to something. I think they're, by the time the season is over, we're going to find all of these multi-dimensional heroes coming together, probably against Doctor Strange. Go watch that one if you want to know what I'm talking about. I will say, though, if you like feel-good stories, half of What If right now is a miss. Because a lot of these end pretty much on a bummer. But the Thor one is fun as hell.
Alrighty.
Other than that, I watched both parts 1 and 2 of Long Halloween, the animated adaptation that Warner Brothers has done of the classic Batman story. It's really good. I like the story from the comic, but for me, art is a very make-or-break thing when it comes to comic books. And I just did not like the art from Long Halloween. I get why people would like it. I understand. It doesn't do it for me. Joker looks a little bit too much like Violator from Spawn with the egregiously oversized mouth and that kind of thing. The art does not... It's not used in this one. This one looks a little bit more closer to the same art style that we've seen in the DC animated films post Apocalypse War, where it seems like they're building another continuity. The Superman Man of Tomorrow and the Justice Society ones have the same art style as well, and it seems like they're sharing that continuity as well. But from a storytelling perspective, it's great. I don't want to give too much away other than that. I think it's very close to the book. I think they changed the ending, but I can't be sure because I haven't read The Long Halloween in so long. I just don't remember the ultimate culprit being who it was in the movie. Now, I could be dead wrong, and it could be 100% accurate, and if that's the case, I apologize. I don't remember it that way. But I do think that it was a fun time, and I really did enjoy watching these films.
Cool.
All right.
Justin, you watch anything interesting?
No.
He's been watching gameplay videos of Immortals Fenyx Rising.
Well, I've heard that it's really good.
No, I've played the game. Why would I do that?
I can't keep track anymore.
All right. Well, I watched some of Star Wars Vision.
Oh, yeah.
This weekend.
Visions. Yeah, yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, we both watched a few episodes of that.
Bunch of different animation styles, small stories that for the most part work well, and some truly ridiculous things that only come from anime. Watch episode 3 for an excellent example of that. My biggest criticism, no Paul Bettany. So yeah, I don't know when Vision's showing up, but it's not in the first 3 episodes.
No. It's Visions, plural, as in...
So there should be multiple
Paul
Bettanys.
Weren't there
2
of them in the WandaVision thing?
Yes, yeah. He's right. So it should be, yeah.
And both of them voiced and played by Paul Bettany.
Okay, that's fair. I hadn't considered that as an argument.
And they're both owned by the same company now.
Yeah.
So I'm just, oh my goodness, are the Infinity Stones like kyber crystals that
yes!
could then be put into lightsabers?
Yes.
What if?
Yeah.
Which means that you could theoretically have a sentient lightsaber.
Oh, yes.
That'll be the what if for Blade.
You know what? I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
All right. In other things here, we got Vivo. This one's a little bit tough for me to review. Not really. Not because it's a challenging show or whatnot, but because my kid loves it and loves the music so much that it's played on a lot of repeat, and I love most of the music. So it's a quest movie. Kinkajou's on a quest to deliver that's not a Pokemon, I don't think.
Okay.
It's
all right,
kind
cool.
of a monkey panda thing.
I was trying to, okay.
But a Kinkajou named Vivo is on a quest to deliver his partner's last song to the woman he loved before her final performance. Along the way, there's a clash of musical styles and personalities that I fall on the side of some of the older music style. Anyway, it leads to growth and happy endings for everyone, except for the snake. But he had it coming.
Usually.
He knows what he did.
Yeah.
It's an energetic romp through the Florida Keys, and despite my need for subtitles to catch all of the words to the music, because it's Lin-Manuel Miranda, it is a charming and likable show. With or without kids, I think it's worth a view.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. Cinderella, the Amazon Prime Cinderella. For a full review of this, check out geekapodcast.com, but I will briefly say that I hate that I like it. It's a jukebox musical version of Cinderella. It does a couple of things really well, and that makes the movie. So we get the relationship between the characters are very good, very well thought out, and very reasonable. And we get some pathos for the stepmother that makes her character make more sense. Singers do a really good job. Idina Menzel doing Material Girl is marvelous.
Okay.
And the message being blunt, but good. So if you have a child in their single digits, it's definitely worth the time.
I've always struggled with any Cinderella film.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the let's call it what it is. The child abuse that happens in that story
mm-hmm.
is so difficult for me to get past in that I want to strangle anyone who has ever played the stepmother or the stepsisters.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the characters, but the actual people, because I have that much of a problem differentiating it.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that I've managed to enjoy was Ella Enchanted, and that's because they gave a magical reason for why Cinderella puts up with this shit.
Right.
And that's pretty much the only one I've been able to get through.
This one was good.
Yeah, okay.
You know, when you start out with Rhythm Nation, and eventually you have a mashup of What a Man with Seven Nation Army.
Oh.
It just kind of.
Oh, my.
That happens at the ball where the eligible ladies are singing What a Man about the prince. And the prince and his dudes are singing Seven Nation Army. And just that scene alone is pretty well worth it.
That sounds magical.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when the prince is lamenting that he's got to get married and he sings, Can Anybody Find Me Somebody to Love? With a
that church, made it into Ella Enchanted, too.
With a church choir.
Nice.
It's got some moments.
All right. Cool.
So there's that. Do we have anything else?
Yeah. I've got something.
Yeah.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Okay, so this pretty much has nothing to do with anything, really.
Ooh, but big surprise.
Anyway, given the unusual style of filming long takes in Birdman, have you guys seen Birdman?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I don't mean Harvey, Attorney at Law.
Which is my favorite version of Birdman.
Yeah, well, of course, yes. But given the unusual style of filming long takes, Edward Norton and Michael Keaton, did you know, actually had a running tally of how many flubs and mistakes everyone made. They kept track. Emma Stone made the most mistakes. Zach Galifianakis made the fewest.
Interesting.
There you go.
Well, he's a professional.
Well, yeah. They both are, but...
Not saying that she isn't, but when your primary medium is comedy, you've got to have that timing.
So there you go. So, that's something you didn't need to know, but now you do.
Okay.
Well, then. Well, there being no further business on the agenda, I guess it is time for Kent.
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
By the roll of the dice, my next movie will be Mindhorn. Mindhorn. This month, however, I watched the French cinematic masterpiece, Girls with Balls.
I'm listening.
A movie that takes the general plot of The Most Dangerous Game and inserts a championship volleyball team in place of Sanger Rainsford and a bunch of hillbillies instead of General Zaroff. After a short intro by a folk singer who alerts us to the hot girls about to die, we cut to the girls winning their championship volleyball game and learning in the introduction that these are mostly horrible people.
Oh, the Falcons.
Oh, Falcons.
The Falcon.
Oh, the Falcons. Why aren't there more likable people in the horror genre? I mean, typically the ones that are likable, they receive the goriest, most gruesome deaths.
So you're not sad about it.
On the bright side, we don't have the problem of, you know, likable people being killed. So anyway, volleyball game. They win their game. They almost start a fight with the other team. They get on their bus. They get lost. They stop at some sort of hunting lodge thinking that it's hostile. Instead, it's hostile. And they get into a fight with a bunch of hillbillies. And then they drive off again. However, this time when they're driving off, the bus has been marked by some kind of symbol. Their gas tank has gotten a hole poked into it. And when they run out of gas, it means they stop and camp for the night in the bus. The next morning, they're dragged out and one of the girls is attacked. They scatter and the hunt begins. And what follows, because I'm not going to go into a lot of details here.
Thank you.
I don't think you should watch it anyway, but okay. We're not going to go into a bunch of details. Is the girls running through the woods in bright yellow volleyball uniforms. By the way, who stays in their game uniform after the game? Let alone sleeps in it.
Mm.
They didn't even remove their knee pads. So they win the championship game, and they just stay in that funk.
That is the smell of victory, my friend.
Yeah, it's a smell of something, but I'm pretty sure it's oncoming sepsis. Gross!
Oh, my God.
At any rate, with their lives now on the line and being hunted by a bunch of people, it is amazing, absolutely amazing how irritated I was able to find myself. For example, a couple of these girls are running away, and they're able to hide. They're able to hide. The hunters are just like they end up falling into a creek, you know, that's like, so they're like waist deep in mud.
Right.
And there's a ledge over them. The hunters are just above them like some kind of hillbilly Nazgul sniffing out the One Ring. And it's at this exact moment that one of the girls decides to turn to the other and says, I've been sleeping with your boyfriend. Just the once. I mean, maybe twice. Definitely not more than five.
Not the time.
At the time that the other one is also trying to be like, shh, shh, and then they get peed on because it's funny. You know, when you're hiding and the two of you are arguing and fighting about an affair that you're having while you're being hunted by a bunch of hillbillies, and then the hillbillies pee on you because they don't see you down there.
C'est la vie.
Comedy. So that's one group. And then you've got another group. You got the
That joke team. Is number one in my book.
You got the team captain, you got the showboat, and you got the jobber. And they're attacked. They're attacked because one of the hillbillies has a duck decoy on the top of his head, and he's just walking around in the pond. And so all you see is the duck decoy floating around. And he comes up and he attacks, and the captain, who somehow now knows kung fu, fights him off.
The duck decoy guy straight up Tom and Jerry'd their asses?
Yep.
All right.
And so okay. She fights him off, but doesn't kill him. He comes back and attacks. The showboat kills him by cutting off his head. All right? So the head falls down. The body stands up, blood squirting from the neck.
Nope.
And it walks around for the rest of the movie in and out of various scenes.
They weakened it, Bernie'd that thing?
No, that one you could assume that it was still alive. This one's walking around without a head. Not like a nearly headless Nick situation where it's just, you know, poorly executed. No, the head was gone.
The totally headless Tom situation.
Yes.
Okay.
And he just wanders around, blood going at the top of his, you know, former head spot. All right, so the captain fights him off. The guy is killed. And just as she's like going up to the showboat to be like, oh, thank you so much. The showboat who's holding the machete stabs the captain. You know, on accident, but stabs her, takes the knife out. And she's like, you stabbed me. You are so off the team. So she stabs her again. The rest of the film is much the same. A few of the girls are kidnapped. Most are killed. The coach, who ran off at the very beginning, like comes back in time for a great big fight. The showboat makes a heel turn, and eventually all the bad guys are killed. All right. Movie ends with a final song by the folk singer, who is, by the way, the best part of this movie, because I don't even know if he's actually singing in French. He's singing in the French that sounds like Steve Martin speaking French about the, you know, needing to order omelets du fromage. All right. But he offers us the moral of the tale. Play volleyball well, and your chances of survival are good. But a second moral says never give up hope. If someone cuts off your leg, you'll probably still cope. One more piece of advice, girls, I hope it's understood. Never tell your life story to weird guys in the woods. Now, there is a unique balance that must be struck in horror comedies, and it's hard to do.
Yeah.
Most of the time,
yeah.
You lean too far in one direction or the other. This one avoids that by leaning away from both horror and comedy and into some form of surreality and gore. I wanted to like it. I was going into this with hopes of silliness, and there are a few moments that are silly, such as when the volleyball team decides to use the volleyballs to serve into the faces of their hunters, you know, and somehow think that that's going to stop them until we get the really dramatic scene of the hunters like stirring and stabbing the volleyballs with hunting knives.
No!
There are some of those moments like that.
Wilson!
But ultimately, I cannot recommend this to anyone.
Oh.
Do not be like me. Oh. Also, don't forget to check out our other offerings. We've got Retromantics and Geek Cave Plays on YouTube. We've got other podcasts, You Want Me to Watch What, and the occasional TLDR. Don't forget to check out Extra Life. You know, you can find that right on our page, geekcavepodcast.com. You can search for any of our names. If you forget our website, shame on you.
Yeah, well, if you just go to extra-life.org and search for Geek Cave Podcast, you'll find the team
you'll
there.
You'll find us there, too. And so, for Kent Harris, majestic.
Mm.
Darren Wright, inspiring.
Okay.
Justin White, stirring. I'm Chad Savage, embarrassing. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.